Welcome back. This is our third part of our Microsoft Virtual Academy series on SAML. And we switched the order a little bit, so we're going to talk about panels next so we can have a short session, then have a lunch break. And then we'll get back to controls afterwards. And we're also going to do Q&A for the past session and for this one at the end of these panels and layout session, because this is a straightforward one. So far we've talked about, you know, shapes, and we've kind of been giving them sense of controls and buttons and borders and things that are happening. Mm-hmm. We haven't dived deep into controls, but you know, panels is this kind of a special class that not everybody's familiar. Depending on what platform you're coming from, you might not be familiar with it.
Correct.
So the concept of a panel is very straightforward. It's all about layout.
Absolutely.
So a panel is just this one class. And it inherits from framework elements, so it has a lot of functionality, but it's not a control.
Mm-hmm. And pretty much everything you can draw on the screen inherits from framework element, right? You can really pretty much assume that, at least UI element.
For UI element, for sure.
For sure.
And everything inherits to the top level from dependency object.
Exactly.
But the useful ones, you're right, like the useful ones are kind of framework element.
Mm-hmm.
We always say like the old saying used to be UI element is where life begins.
Uh-huh.
So at the UI element, we have layout, input, focus, and eventing. And then at the framework element, we add, you know, the data binding, we add all the other stuff.
Yeah.
And then at the control element, which we'll get to, we'll add the templating.
Exactly.
Right? But so this is a framework element, which means it has life.
Mm-hmm.
And their job is to just arrange objects inside of it.
Exactly.
So if you think about, for example, we're going to talk about grid, which mm-hmm. is a table layout. Or we're going to talk about a stack panel, which is just, you know, putting items in a kind of a sequential, in a, you know, linear manner, whether it's mm-hmm. horizontal or vertical.
Correct.
So the concept of layout is just positioning its children.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's actually two interesting operations that happens when you're going to position something. In SAML, we say we have what we call a two-pass layout.
Mm-hmm.
The first pass is called measuring.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the parent. So let's imagine, you know, I'm the parent and I'm going to go in and look at all my children. Children mm-hmm. are the items that are immediate, at, you know, under my visual tree level, immediately
in
under
the hierarchy
under
of the hierarchy. XAML. Yep.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to go all my children and I'm going to measure them.
Yep.
Right? So I go through them and I say, hey, how much space do you want? How much space do you want? How much space mm-hmm. do you want? And then once I know how much space they have and I apply my layout rules,
mm-hmm.
then I can say, okay, now I'm going to arrange, which is, hey, I'm going to position you.
Mm-hmm. Which, by the way, again, puts the concept of tree in the focus, because the element in question, if that element has children, it also has to ask its own children, hey, how much space do you need,
yep,
right?
Exactly. And it's all coming down.
Absolutely.
But we measure them once and then we arrange them once. That's what it is. So
yeah.
When you look at panel, I got it right here on the screen, kind of the more interesting properties, which is going to be, it does have a background because
mm-hmm.
we want a layout. And remember, it's actually interesting because the hit testing only happens if you have a background. So
correct.
If you want a panel to be transparent, but you want to hit test against it, just put a transparent brush,
mm-hmm.
right? And then it has a children collection. You see right there, it's a UI element collection. And then it can also have transitions, you know. But the main thing that you're looking at here is that children collection and then the arrange and the measure override. And I'm going to show you some custom panels at the end of this session so you can see a little bit of that, right? Now, I'm not going to talk about every possible panel layout because we have WPF, you know, Silverlight and Windows Store, and we have kind of different options.
Sure.
But there's three that I call the core framework panels, which are Canvas, Stack Panel, and Grid.
Yep.
And those are kind of the workhorses of most of the layout.
Yeah.
So we covered those. You'll be able to understand, mm-hmm. you know, you'll get layout really well, and you'll have kind of enough horsepower to be able to get any task done.
That's correct. If you think of the grid, by the way, you know, quick segue into the design, right? The Microsoft design is strongly inspired from
yep,
the Swiss design, and you know that makes me happy personally, and the German design, which are strongly grid oriented. So having a grid panel out of the box in XAML makes all that really very, very easy.
Yep.
And if you think about HTML, where there is not really this concept of grid, it makes things really harder to organize. So here in XAML, you have the full grid, full power, fantastic panel.
Yep, exactly. And so let's start with the basics, Canvas.
Mm-hmm.
Canvas is, hey, if we didn't have any layout, what would happen? and the reality is, if we didn't have any layout, everything would just go to 0-0.
Yeah.
And Canvas kind of builds on that and says, look, it's going to be, everything will be absolute positioned. Right now, we don't position with X and Y. Even though I have X and Y coordinates, Canvas has a Canvas left and Canvas top and Canvas right and Canvas bottom property. And you can kind
of position. Which are attached properties that we mentioned earlier.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah. So they're attached properties and you can just position things that are in there. So for example, here, top left 0, 0, we would put the button there. You know, top right to be, you know, the top would be 0 and right would be whatever the length of the parent or whatever the size of the parent is. It would go there. Mm-hmm. So this is just absolute position. This is the most basic layout that you could ever come up with.
And by the way, earlier we talked about the render transform origin, which goes between 0 and 1. Not to be confused here, that is really a pixel value for the canvas. So you have a precise positioning. Yeah.
Yep. And then, so the next one is stack panel. And I'm going to go walk through all these slides first, and then I'll give you all of them in code.
Sure.
And SAML just stacks literally all the child elements together.
Yep.
And we can have a vertical orientation or it can have a horizontal orientation, right? So you're just stacking stuff up in on one direction or the other.
It's By the way, if you just go back, I just wanted to mention something. XAML has something which is really powerful. You can actually have negative margins on an element. Yep. So if you have two elements which are stacked but which overlap on top of each other, you can actually set a negative margin on one of those elements and have them overlap this way, which is very convenient.
Yep, and we'll cover margin in 3 or 4 slides. But yeah, the negative angle is pretty cool.
Uh-huh.
And then here's the workforce grid. And this is a table layout.
Mm-hmm.
So here we're going to have row definitions and column definitions.
Yep.
So you're kind of just defining columns, defining rows, very much like table layout in HTML.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit familiar if you're familiar with that. And for example, here I have 3 rows or 4 rows. So you can see here, like, you know, you saw the animation. I can go back and say, just animate a row equals 0, row 1, 2, and 3.
Mm-hmm.
You got
starting
all your
at
columns,
zero,
and
right? Don't get confused.
And here, the rows can be defined by many different things. They can be defined in pixel sizes. They can be defined as percentage. I'll go to the demos and I'll show you. So, for example, you had this button, and I wanted this button to take over this whole 3 rows. I can just say button row span is 3. I can also go in there and declare something with a color span of 2. I can mix those two and match them, right? So I can do a lot of that mixing and matching as we go. Right. I'm going to give you a couple more properties that affect layout, and then we'll dive onto layout for all of them, so you can see a little bit of what's happening there. So obviously, when you think about layout, width and height matter.
Obviously.
Now, if you look at our platform, something you'll see is you'll see this extra property called actual width and actual height.
Correct.
And what happens there is, so you can have, we're going to do dynamic layouts a lot.
Yeah.
So sometimes
because width is actually, I said before that pretty much everything is a double in XAML. But width is actually not a double. It's actually a length element, which can have a value or something else, right?
Yep, exactly. Or sometimes you just don't set the value of something. And then actual width and actual height, after we've measured and arranged, you know, those values will be there and you can just query
set by the
that.
Parent or set by the constraints.
Exactly.
Like if you have a button with content and you set the width to auto, it's just going to take the width of the content. Yeah.
Some more properties we have, alignment, margin, and padding. And I'm going to walk you through all of them here. So alignment just positions kind of... It determines a position and the stretch of an element. So, for example, I can say, look, align this element to the left or align it to the center. If it's a horizontal alignment, I say left, center, right. Or I can just say stretch, which means take as much space as I can.
Yeah.
And all of this, if you have dynamic layouts, is really useful because then as things resize, you don't have to worry about it. You can
Absolutely.
Just say stretch me to whatever space I have.
Yeah, think of the new feature on Windows 8.1 where you can actually have two applications side by side and then move the divider. So that's very dynamic layout. And if you use that, it's really easy to do.
Yep. And then very much like horizontal alignment, we will have a vertical alignment, top, center, bottom, and stretch. You'll see this in action in a minute. The next property that we have is margin. And margin, it's interesting. Margin is kind of one element saying, hey, this is how much space I want between, you know, you and me. It's kind of our personal space.
Yeah.
Right? We can only be so
here
close.
Here we have a margin of about 150 centimeters, I would say, right?
Yep. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, so yeah, 4 feet is, you know, what we say in the States. And
yeah, well, okay.
but the margin is kind of like, it's external, right? So for example, right here, I have these... rectangles, and this yellow one right here has no margins. So, and they're in a stack panel, so they're kind of oriented horizontal. And So this yellow one has no margin. So mm-hmm. the green is immediately right there, kind of like crowding him almost. Yep. Right. And again, if you had not a negative margin, you could, you know,
even
could
overlap.
Be over. Yeah,
overlap,
it could
yeah,
be overlapped. Even. Right. And then the next rectangle, this green one or this yellow one that comes in third is saying, hey, my margin is 30. Now, there's all kinds of different margin properties. Here, I'm using the short syntax, which is 30, but I can do left, top, right, bottom.
Yeah.
And it starts left, top, right, bottom.
And have different values for those four elements.
I remember it with letter, you know, LTR. Mm-hmm. That's kind of how we let them, because HTML starts with top, right.
In CSS, it's, it starts at the top, exactly. Yeah.
Yep. But here, you know, so here I'm just using the short syntax. So here, everything will have a margin of 30. Everywhere.
Every
if you use the short one, if I had said 30, 50, then it would be 30 on left and right, and then 50 on top and bottom.
Correct.
But that's just, I'll show you more syntax as we go. But here we have, you know, the second rectangle is 30 pixels away from the first, because that's what he said. And, you know, you see here that it's still not getting constrained, because in the horizontal stack panel, we're defining a height, and it's still pretty, like, there's not enough margin for us to have to shrink him. The next one right here is the yellow, or this green one right here, and it's got a margin of 50. So here what you see is, between this yellow and the red, we have 80 units, right? We have the 30, and then the 50.
Plus the 50, yeah.
Right? So they're kind of adding up. And then the very last one is this yellow one, and it's got a margin of 80. Mm-hmm. Now here, because it's got a margin of 80, and it's on top and bottom, you see that we kind of shrinked him a little bit.
It's pushing everything, right? Because, yeah, you know, exactly. Yeah.
And in this case, it's actually not pushing him, because he has a fixed height of 100, but the layout is clipping
it's
him.
It's clipping, yeah,
yep,
which,
exactly.
can be sometimes a little bit annoying. So if you see this kind of things happening into your UIs, that's what you want to look for. Where do I have too much margin and maybe not enough height and width in the container, which causes everything to clip? Yeah, that's possible.
Exactly. Now, so that's margin. And margin is, hey, how much space is between two sibling elements, external space. Mm-hmm. The next one right here is padding, which is, hey, I have something inside, right, with my children elements, whether it's a panel or like, let's say you have a border. And, the border is saying, look, I want some space between me and whatever is inside of me. And that's what padding is. Mm-hmm. It's just empty. You know, it's a space that will be empty, but inside of it. So, for example, right here, this first border has a padding of 40, and you see here, you know, a little bit of space everywhere. And then the second one has, you know, padding of 100 on this, which is a kind of a, you know, then you see a lot more space here. And then on the top and bottom, it's only got a 5.
Yep.
So you see that it's, you know, it's getting much closer to the edges.
And only certain elements have padding. So here we have a border, which is, it's not a panel, so don't get confused. It can have only one child, but it's it's a container, right? So here you can set padding. You can set padding on a button, which is going to, you know, influence the way that the content of the button is rendered. But not every element. Every element has margin, but not every element has padding.
Yep, exactly. Mm-hmm. So here I'm going to switch on to blend and just walk through a couple of samples there. And then, you know, just to give you kind of exercising a little bit of those layouts. So we'll go here. Brand new project. I just did file new project. Layout, for me, blend is very, very useful for layout. And I'm just going to come back here, go to 50%, bring in some of my, you know, views so you can kind of see a little bit of the SAML and the items as we go. So I'm just going to go in there and kind of define some pretty basic layouts here. So it's all about drag and drop. So we begin here. Let's drag something like a grid. So I can come back here and... I'll just drag a grid right here. And for example, within Blend, I can come back here, and you see here, if I hover over the edges right here, I can define my rows this way. Mm-hmm. Right? So I'm just going to define 4 rows, and I'll just do 3 columns exact same way. That's one way to do it. And you can see here, now these are all as a percentage, right? Because I defined 3 column definitions and 3 row definitions. These are hardcore percentages. So as the screen resizes, this UI will shrink and grow as we go.
Yeah. So to be absolutely exact, right, if I may say, because it might confuse the people that it actually doesn't add up to 100. So it's not a percentage per se. It's actually a proportion
between
the value. So if you have the first one is 40 star, the next one is 35 star, it's going to be a little bit smaller. And the next one is 49 star, it's going to be a little bit bigger, right?
Yep. So for example,
it doesn't have
here,
to add to anything, basically.
For example, here, if I add everything 40, now they're all the exact same size.
Exact same proportion.
Right? Now, for example, here, so this is 40 star, mm-hmm. right? So that's kind of a 25% for each. Now, if, for example, I say, look, let's make this a fixed height. Mm-hmm. So from here on, when I set the height to 40 pixels, he's going to be small, and he won't resize no matter what.
Exactly.
And then what you see...
You remove the star here.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And what you see here is that, you know, the 40, the other ones are still the same size because mm-hmm. it's 40. It's the proportion of the leftover space. So
of
star
the
is like, hey, what's left over?
Yeah.
Right? And that's what grid will let you, will let you do.
And this is super useful because when you think about it, right, sometimes you want to have a small border on the side to do some kind of visual effect, right, like a deep blue background or whatever. But then after that, you want the rest to resize really dynamically. And if you have a very large screen, you don't want this border to be very large. You want it to be still like 10 pixels or 12 pixels.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I'm just going to go add, I'll add a little rectangle here. And you'll see a couple things first. First of all, I'm using Blend. So you'll see that Blend tries to be smart about it. So it knows, like, it saw me drag it. And it saw me do all the things. So it added all the properties that it saw me do. It's doing its best to think about all the things that we just showed. So for example, here, and let's just focus on that rectangle right here. You'll see that just by dragging, Blend did a lot of the work that we needed to do, right? So I have my rectangle here, and it says, look, you want horizontal line to be left and top because that's what it kind of saw me do. It saw me draw, and it gave me a height. Now, I can change it, for example, here, and I can change it here in the SAML, where I'm just going to say horizontal alignment is stretch, right? And that will automatically change it. Now, notice that right now it's stretching, but there's still the margin property, so it didn't take over everything. If I just come back here and get rid of that, you'll see that, you know, now it's actually taken. Now it's still looking
you'll
at it.
Save and, yeah.
Yep. So you can see here, and I can come back here, by the way. I'm editing them in you know, by hand right here, but I can also come back here and do them here.
Yeah, and by the way, there is also a nice feature in Blend. If you right-click on your rectangle, there is also a Reset All, which is really nice, which allows you, if you draw, it will have margin, alignment, it will have a whole lot of things. Reset All just resets everything, and then you have everything set to automatic.
Yep. And you'll see here, for example, here, it didn't stretch earlier. It didn't, when I say horizontal alignment stretch, it didn't stretch automatically because there was a width property.
Oh, yeah.
And that property was overriding. But now I can come back here, right here under width, so I can change it to be width 200. And you'll see that it will automatically, if you tell it to stretch, it'll center it for you.
Which is a pretty complex scenario because when the grid says, hey, how much do you want, right? The rectangle here says, well, okay, I want stretch, but I also want 200. So what wins? So that's the rectangle's own problem to decide how much do I want, basically.
Yep, exactly. And here, for example, I also have a row span. So I can come back here in the same rectangle. Let's say that I went back and I just did a vertical alignment right here. And I also set it to stretch, right? You'll see right there. Let's get rid of this height. And you'll see now it's taking over the first row. Now I can come back here and say, oh, my row span is 2, my row span is 3, and control everything like that. And again, the beauty of this is that as we resize on the screen, and this will be very, very important on Windows because Windows, you know, most modern PCs are definitely like 1366 by 768 is what we kind of designed for. But on Windows, we have the multi-window scenarios. Yeah. We have very large displays. We have everything.
Multi-PPI scenario where one monitor can be one PPI and the other one is another depth. Yeah.
So you're going to see all of this come back and forth. On Windows, this will matter a lot. That's why everything we do is a dynamic layout on Windows.
Correct.
Windows Phone has kind of like two resolutions.
More or less, but I mean, think about just rotating the screen and then suddenly everything changes.
Yep.
And if you use dynamic layout to do that, you really simplify your life quite a lot.
Yep. So that's a little bit of the interactions. You see the alignment. In this case, I didn't have any padding, so I can go back here and, for example, move these elements inside a border because grid wouldn't have any padding. But I can just come back here.
Oh, you can do that much easier.
Oops.
In Blend.
You want me to wrap it?
Right-click and then...
Well, it was two rows, so...
Well, still, right-click and then group into border.
Group into border.
Et voilà, you see, Blend is really fantastic.
And it added it right there. And it actually took a lot of the properties that were in the panel.
It's very clever.
Right, and now, for example, now I can go back here.
And say padding equals...
Padding equals 50. right? And you see that it's just padding it. And you can now see the context. So if I do 50, that's good. If I do 50, 10, now it's going to be 50 on the top and right, or 50 on the left and right, 10 top and bottom.
Correct.
Or I can just go crazy here and say,
set all
like,
the
you know,
fall
set
value
all them one right here and like this. Now, if I can also say, you know, for example, I can do margins and padding such that the thing becomes invisible because it's so far off the screen. If
because it's going to be clipped totally.
Yep, exactly. Mm-hmm. So you're seeing all these things. And then the last one that you have is you also have a visibility property, which will affect layout because items can be visible or collapse. And if your items collapse.
Like if you think in the stack panel, for example, if you have something which is stacked and then you collapse it, of course the rest is going to.
The rest of them move.
Yeah.
Right? So there's a difference between visibility and collapse. Like visible, like if you put something visible with opacity, so transparent, it can still take space.
Sure.
But if it's collapsed, it doesn't take space on the layout. That's
correct.
Where the measure and the
And WPF happens. Even have a hidden value for visibility. Yep. So if you ever wondered why is visibility not true or false, it's because WPF actually has a hidden, which means it's not visible, but it's still taking space, right?
Yep, exactly. Mm-hmm. So that's a little bit of layout. So you get it, you know, again, grid is the more dynamic one. Stack panel is just going to stack items. I guess I could do real quick a stack panel here. I was going to do a reset quickly. Actually, let's do it. But this, so let's just do it this way. Well, we only have one element is the problem. So I can just come back here and change it to be a stack panel.
Mm-hmm.
And then we'll add more elements.
As always, the Blend XAML editor is a little bit less powerful than the Visual Studio editor. In the Visual Studio, if you do that, it would actually go and change everything for you and very neatly. It's very
exactly.
convenient.
And that's what I was after. But so I'll just create a new page here.
Yeah.
And I can do the exact same thing that we did earlier. So I can just add a stack panel.
Mm-hmm.
And then here I can just add different elements as we did earlier. So I can
double-click back
here. And I can just start adding, like, I'm dragging a rectangle. So I was going to add a couple. And I can, for example, just add a text box. And right now they're being stacked in the
vertically
manner.
Yeah.
Right? I can go change them and set the properties. So right now I added a text box, text box right here. Let's just increase the font a little bit so it takes a little more space.
Yeah.
And you see that they're stacked. I can come back here onto this text box
Select
right
the
here.
Stack panel, yeah.
Yep, and change, like for example, add some margins onto it, and
correct,
you'll see that it's going to affect everything we had. So you'll see here, if I go margin top, it's just going to start going a little bit farther away from the rectangle.
Yeah, which is great, by the way, when you build this kind of, like line of business applications where you have always like label, text box, these kind of scenarios.
Yep, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So you'll see here, this layout is very, very straightforward. All you have to do is like use the core layouts that we have.
Correct.
Again, we have a lot more than the three that I showed you. I showed you the three that are across all platforms and the three that are kind of the workhorses for everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
I do have a
And everything can
here.
Be put inside the scroll viewer as well. So if you have really the problem that your screen is actually smaller than your content, you can just put everything into a scroll viewer and have the scrolling.
Yep. And the last thing I want to show you is this concept of a custom layout.
Just close this one and no, not okay. Just close
it's
it.
Okay. Well.
Well, okay.
It's just let it.
You like
be
you like risk. I think it doesn't actually do anything. It's just telling you that you should think about it.
Yep, I've added the. So and this is just I'll show you the concept. I'll show you the concept first. This actually came from Wintellect. It's one of their samples. Jeff Precise and Jeffrey Richter.
Hey Jeff.
Hey guys. I stole one of your samples. And these are just, they show you different layouts. At some point, all of us have written two or three of these. When Serialize started, we all wrote these three or four that we learned from. But it's useful. And they just show you different layouts here. So for example, like this is a radio panel.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll see here, there'll be a radius property. And you just define the radius, and then it positions all elements around. It divides, it takes the 360 degrees, divides it among the number of items that you want to lay out.
And the beauty in that is that the element itself doesn't know about it. It just, you know, the panel is taking care of arranging them, but the element itself doesn't have to know.
Yep, and that's where attached properties and all these extra dependency properties come in, because a border doesn't need to know about radio panel. It cannot know out of every possible panel.
No, absolutely.
So that's kind of where we're at. So this is one example. This is another one where they have. It's the exact same concept, but it's a radio panel. It's the exact same layout as before, but this time they're just laying text boxes.
Mm-hmm.
So again, you see the power and flexibility on WPF, and this is your standard carousel control.
Yeah, right? It's so, with a, like, a, how do you say, you skew it, so basically you do that, one of those 2.5D.
There's a little bit of a projection
going on here.
So I'm just showing you this because I want to make sure you know that the layouts are very extensible.
Yes.
Right? So if you look at the code, which again, we'll put on our, or actually we'll put a pointer to, or we'll link to there so that we don't kind of go in there. But for example, if you look at the code, there's nothing but everything I just described. So I have a radial panel, inherits from panel. It's got a dependency properties right here, for example, radius and rotation, you know, so that you can, and a little bit of speed and a few other items. And they're all dependency properties because they need to be data bound, they need to be styled, they need to be everything else.
Yep.
So this is a great way to learn about those concepts of dependency properties. There's no attached dependency properties on this one. But you can get familiar with dependency properties and the system. And then at some point here, we'll get to the meat of this, which is the measure and arrange.
Yep.
And you see here that the way you declare, or the way you create a custom panel is just override, so inherit from panel, and then override the measure override and the arrange override methods.
And notice that we get everything is in size, so it really illustrates what we do here. We say, hey, how much space do I have at my disposal? And you say, well, how much space do I actually need? And and there is a whole lot of you know, of hierarchy going on to decide who is actually taking precedence on that.
Yep. So here's their meal. So you have a measure override method and an arrange override. Measure first, then arrange is kind of the rule. And you'll come back here and see it's looking at its, you know, available space, and then it's actually measuring their children with how much they need, which this is pretty much going to ignore. I was just going to tell them you have as much space here, and then it's going to arrange them in there. So,
yeah, I bet there is a pi somewhere there.
Yep, exactly. There's definitely a 360
there
degrees and radians and a pi.
Correct.
But that's where we're at. So you have the examples for custom panels. Panels are extensible. And that's it with regards to layout. Windows, or everything Windows and Windows Phone, dynamic layouts is super, super critical. Right? If you come from, like, well, HTML is very dynamic anyway. If you come from, like, an Xcode world.
Yeah, they pretty much invented it.
iOS, and they do have a little bit of paddings and kind of, like, layout constraints, but not as much. We use the concept of panels, which are going to be these workhorses that all they do is lay everything out. We use them a lot. So become familiar with these three and become familiar with the properties that we gave you, and then you'll understand layout very, very well. So that's it for panels. I want to go back to Q&A because in the last sessions we went over, and I want to make sure
just
people...
Just a tiny bit.
...are not too discouraged saying, hey, they're not getting to any of our Q&A. My guess is that, again, we have Matthias Shapiro, Nisha Singh, and Nikola Metulev discussing all this stuff, so answering the Q&A, so I doubt there's a lot, but we can answer a couple, and feel free to, you know, I guess what I'm, the reason I'm going back to Q&A is I want people to continue to submit.
Yeah.
Don't give up, you know, if we skipped it last time. Really quick, what's advice to who's starting in Windows Store development? Is it better to go to Windows 8.1 and Visual Studio 13, or is it something, or should we start with Visual Studio 12 and Windows 8?
Yeah, personally, I would start with the latest. There is really a lot of improvement in 8.1 that you are going to want to take advantage of, and there are also a few features that are actually deprecated in 8.1 over 8. So if you have a choice and your project is not like, okay, I have to release in August, right?
Exactly.
I would probably go with 8.1.
So, yeah, so I think I'll second that, but I'll caveat it the other way around, which is it comes down to when you ship.
Oh, of course.
Windows 8 is on market today. Lots of people making a lot of money on it, right? So if you want to wait, if your project is going to take 4 months to write, and I'm not saying the Windows 8.1 will ship in 4 months, but we know that Windows 8.1 will ship before the end of the calendar year. If your project is going to take 6 months, then starting with 8.1 has a lot of advantages because number one is you do have new templates. We do have new properties. We've optimized quite a bit. So you're going to be like optimized right from the beginning. You don't have to migrate your code, change anything
Correct.
As we go. However, Windows 8.1 hasn't shipped, won't ship until end of the
of
year.
Course.
So if you need to go sooner, go to 8.
Yeah.
Now, to go back to your point, you make up something interesting, and one thing that you saw was me. I'm running Visual Studio 2013, I'm running 8.1, and I can open, you saw that prompt right there that says, hey, maybe you should upgrade.
Yeah.
So one thing that you could do is you can install Visual Studio 2012, do File, New Project, and that way you get Windows 8.1 templates with Windows 8.1 features, mm-hmm. right? And then you can side-by-side install Visual Studio 2013.
Absolutely.
And as long as in Visual Studio 2013 you have not upgraded your project, you can continue to target 8.
Yeah, because so 8.1 is going to run 8.0 applications.
Yep, and yeah. 8.1.
Yeah.
So as long as you don't upgrade your project, you get the benefit of the new yeah. tools, but you're still using the old templates mm-hmm. and the old features. Yeah. You know.
One thing that I wanted to say, we had this dilemma, you know, between Windows Phone 7 and Windows Phone 8. But here the scenario is very different because Windows 8.1 is going to be a free upgrade, which is going to be available to pretty much any machine that you already have. So for the user, it's not going to be, oh my God, I have to buy a new device, right? It's going to run on the device you already have. It's going to be free. It's going to be brought by Windows Update, so it's going to be pretty seamless. And I think that it makes sense to keep that in mind. But you can also very well start with 8.0, and like this, you cover really all the bases and then upgrade to the new features. Yep.
If you're shipping before 6 months, start with 8 and mm-hmm. use the upgrade if you want. If you're shipping after 6 months, start with 8.1 because then you have the better templates. They're more optimized, mm-hmm. and we did deprecate a few features, or mm-hmm. some features are just no longer needed. Mm-hmm. So there's things that are changing there that you would want to start with the right one.
Yeah.
But I would say, you know, don't wait because your competitor is probably not waiting.
Yeah, that's true.
Right. So that's one question. Let's tackle a couple more and then we'll give them a kind of a lunch break. Mm-hmm. Or a meal break.
Yeah,
for those that are not in the U.S. So this is a really great one that I definitely want to emphasize because we've been talking about this a lot. Surface RT. Mm-hmm. So the question is, Surface RT, does it run SAML apps?
Right? Yes.
And I'm rewording it. Is it Surface RT does not run Silverlight? Does it run SAML apps? And actually, that's Surface RT.
That's my RT, exactly. Yep. And I have a bunch. I cannot show it because it's not wired, but I was running TweetRow before, for example, which is a XAML C# app. I have the Twitter app that you showed runs on that as well. So absolutely, it does run XAML C# application. It's correct that it does not run Silverlight, but to be honest, the Silverlight scenario is a scenario that you probably don't really need so much.
Yep.
I would rather recommend to just go in the Windows Store, get the full app, and then you have all the goodies, all the additional experience of that.
Exactly.
And it has a great battery life, by the way, so it's really nice.
Yep. So Surface RT is the OS that runs on ARM, mm-hmm. And it has a full-blown Windows Store stack. So mm-hmm. everything we're discussing here, the apps that I showed you, like I didn't show Netflix, but Cocktail Flow, Twitter, all of those apps that are from the Windows Store will run fine, and they're being written with SAML.
Mm-hmm.
So we definitely support it on Surface RT. Great performance. Especially in 8.1, we've made a lot of improvements mm-hmm. in that space. So there's a lot of really great stuff coming there.
Yeah.
And that's why we're running... A lot of
flexibility. You can have like two applications side by side at the same time. Yep. You can watch a video while you're doing some Excel editing. You have the full Office suite, including Outlook, by the way, which is new, right? So it's a very good device. I'm really happy with it.
Yep. So I think... two more questions just because these are going to defer to later, and then we'll take the last one. So somebody asked, are we going to talk about debugging data binding? And we're definitely going to get into data binding, do a lot of demos, et cetera. We're not going to get too advanced into the debugging, or pending time, we'll see how far we get. But we're not going to go too deep. If you have a question, feel free to ping, you know, Laurent or me directly. And we'll try to answer if with the content we show you mm-hmm. today, we don't get into it.
Yeah, best scenario is probably over Twitter. I would say you have our Twitter on the screen
right now, but it comes in the training, so that's
a good scenario.
So that's
exactly.
One. And then there's this question here, is there a native MVVM framework in .NET? And the answer is no. Microsoft still hasn't shipped an MVVM framework. We believe that, especially like, and this is, I won't speak for all of Microsoft, but I believe that MVVM is like a religion. Everybody has their own favorite one.
Which, by the way, maybe not everybody knows what it is. So we'll have a whole section about MVVM pretty much at the end of this course, right? It's a pattern to build application. You can build application without it, but if you want, I'm going to show some examples.
Yep. So we're definitely going to have an MVVM session, and it's going to be 100% MVVM Lite.
It's actually not correct. I'm totally agnostic. I don't use MVVM Lite because I want to illustrate the concept. But you can do everything I show easier with MVVM Lite.
Yeah, fair. Like, you know, so we're going to focus on the MVVM Lite is what I was after. But there's other frameworks out there
correct.
That are not Microsoft.
Yeah, we'll talk about those.
Have one. We'll mention all of that. And then there was one more question, and I think this has been kind of answered, but I want to make sure I address it because we're spending all day training people on SAML, and mm-hmm. I want to emphasize it. Why SAML is a little more complicated than using HTML5. And again, I think we talked about it earlier, which is, to me, SAML has a lot more power than what you get. Like, SAML is a bigger framework, has a lot more power than mm-hmm. what you get out of like just basic HTML elements. Mm-hmm. SAML can be as simple as HTML if all you want to do is drag and drop five elements mm-hmm. and do, you know, like handle an event and drag, so drag and drop five elements, handle an event and mm-hmm. do a little bit of coding. So we're not much more complicated. There's a lot more power where today we're going under the hood, teaching you a lot of everything. So you're going to learn a little bit more. But I always tell people like, you know, and Lauren, you train people a lot too. Mm-hmm. Usually for me, it's you spend 2 days learning the cores of SAML. Then you start practicing, getting more familiar, and you're there, mm-hmm. right? There's nothing like, it's not like you're learning, like when you learn how to ride a new car, drive mm-hmm. a car, mm-hmm. you spend the first 3 or 4 days learning the concepts, and then afterwards you can drive any car,
yeah,
right? And I think there's a little bit of that here, yeah. where the concepts of layout, the concepts of, you know, data binding, mm-hmm. all these things, you yeah. know, if you come from a platform that has them, you mm-hmm. should be familiar with it. It's just the implementation.
Yeah, and don't forget the power of the tools. I mean, we showed you quite a lot of Blend. We showed you Visual Studio. We said that yep. it's, you know, it has really awesome IntelliSense. Blend is very visual. Yep. You can have the split view, so you can learn easily. Okay, if I change these properties, what is happening in the XAML, what is happening on the screen? So you have really a lot of very nice helpers, you know, to accompany you, to bring you basically to the goal that you want. So it's very beautiful.
Yep, exactly. And then there's a last question, and then we'll go to a meal break. Somebody asked, because earlier we did the demo where we had this text box, and then we had kind of the, you know, the slash that closes the tag, or the more verbose,
oh, right,
you know,
right.
closing the element
the self-closing
text box.
Tag, yep. or the, yeah.
And somebody says, you know, what is the, or what's kind of the recommended, or...
Well, it depends. I used to say it really depends how Swiss you are, maybe. I mean, you know, Swiss people like order, so I like to have self-closed elements, because it always disturbs me when I have, like, a naked... slash text box somewhere. But honestly, it doesn't make any difference. It's not going to impact the way that your application runs or the time that it takes to start. It's exactly the same. But if an element is empty, personally, I like to have a self-closing one. It's yep. just a matter of yeah so being Swiss.
So I like naked stuff, but I still like to the closing
good for you.
So I'm actually like, I like the closing tag too. So yeah. I say I keep my SAML as concise as I
yeah.
can.
You know, in many cases, it's not actually really an issue, because if you work with the tools, they are going to pretty much do it for you, and they are going to pretty much do it right. So they are not going, like Blend, for example, doesn't have a slash text box. If the element is empty, it goes back to the self-closing one. So yeah, most of the time it's not. But really, it doesn't impact your application at all.
Yep. So I like to be concise. So as in some cases you cannot, like when you have grids and borders, you definitely have to have an open element and then a bunch of children.
Oh yeah,
inside
if you have content,
it, and then a closed element, yeah. So you won't have the choice. Mm-hmm. But that's just where we're at, and you know, it's your choice.
Yeah.
There's a lot of practices out there. We used to have some white papers that mm-hmm. I actually haven't revised in like 3 or 4 years yeah. that talk about best practices, naming conventions, and stuff like yeah. that. So maybe we'll...
Yeah, for me, I think as a closing thing, the best practice I can name is if you go into your tools options in Visual Studio, and there is a place where you can actually select, for example, the, you know, the format that you want. And I don't know if we can switch to my screen quickly, but yep. it's down there in the text editor in the XAML, and here you have formatting spacing. What I love is have position each attribute on a separate line. And the reason is because when you merge, if you format your document automatically, each attribute will be neatly on a separate line. And then when you merge, you will see immediately what changed. Is that the margin that changed, or is that the width that changed? You have diff tools that do that. Once yep. you have set this up, you can easily go into Edit, Advanced. I don't have a document open here, but Edit, Advanced, Format Document, and then yep. you have it, yeah.
Control-K, Control-F.
KD.
It's a what?
D? No. Oh, it depends on the seams that you use.
Yeah, it might be language specific.
Yeah, I use Control K, Control D personally. Yeah.
So Control K, Control F is the one I use. And and that's a really interesting thing because you can also control the spacing. By default, it's 4 spaces, which I think is very readable.
Yeah,
but some people like to keep it tighter and they do 2 spaces.
Yeah.
And the editor takes care of all that.
Some even go to tabs, but let's not go into that.
So,
all right.
So that's it for layout. We're going to take a break and we're going to come back at the top of the hour to kind of catch up a little bit. At 1 o'clock Pacific time, PST or PDT. So in 43 minutes or so, we will start again. And we're going to start with controls.
Yep.
So come back. It's going to be great. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Enjoy your meal for those who eat.